Today's shiur is Masechta Zvachim Daf Nun Aleph, and we will begin on Daf Nun Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. Our Gemara continues, as we've been learning in our recent shiurim, about when we have a situation of a double Kal V'Chomer, or different types of combinations. Given as we began with Rav and Ravina both teaching us that by Kachim, a double Hekesh is unacceptable as a derech halimud. So the Gemara asks, "Dav alam b'kal v'chaymer." If first we have a kal v'chaymer, ma'ashi yilmud b'binyan av. Could the kal v'chaymer be followed up by binyan av to be considered a legitimate derech halimud? It's important to point out, as we get into today's shiur be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach, that a binyan av and a mamatzinu are two ways of learning that are actually very similar. In fact, the Mefarshim explained that what is the difference between a binyan av and mamatzinu? That a binyan av and mamatzinu, we know, means that when we have two subjects that are similar, the binyan av and mamatzinu teach us that we can learn the halacha of one from the other. The difference, actually, between a binyan av and a mamatzinu is that a binyan av typically means when we're learning from a combination. That means we have two sources that should shed light on a third situation. And a mamatzinu is by one-on-one relationship. Although, as Mefarshim point out, they're really interchangeable. Because our Gemara, that we're about to learn in a moment, speaks about a binyan, calls what we're learning a binyan av, and it's a one-on-one relationship. So the point of both of them is essentially the same, that we're learning the halacha of one subject from the halacha of one or other subjects because they have common characteristics. In order to understand the next piece of Gemara, we need to make, say, a word of introduction, two words of introduction, actually. One is that we know in our world what does Shechita accomplish. What Shechita accomplishes is that if we have an animal, we have a bird, we shech the animal, we shech the bird, and it's kosher, we could eat it. If it's not kashach, then obviously we may not eat it. But actually, unfortunately in our world, it's not relevant. But actually in the times of Chazal, there was another very important purpose to the shechita, to doing shechita or malika. And that is that there are two very different types of birds or animals that are not kosher. A bird that's not kosher could be not kosher because it's a nevela, that it wasn't slaughtered, it just died or was killed in a different manner. That a nevela is metama, both the nevela of an animal and the nevela of a bird. Whereas an animal that's found, or a bird, that's found to be a trefa, also is non-kosher, but it's not metama. So what I'm essentially saying is that there's a purpose in shechting an animal or a bird that are even treif, that have one of these simonim of being a treif, that we'll discuss in Masech Techulin and Mitzvashem, even though the animal's not going to be eaten, but the shechita accomplishes that it shouldn't be a nevela, and therefore not be tamei, not be matama. What are the halachas of tuma, of a nevela? The halacha of a nevela of an animal is like the typical halacha of a nevela. Somebody carries it or touches it, becomes tamei. The halacha of a nevela of an oif, tohor, of a kosher bird, is very interesting halacha. It's metama abeis habliya, that while that piece of bird is in the person's throat, he becomes tamei. Whatever he wears is tamei. That's the special halacha of tuma abeis habliya. One more word of introduction, which we've learned previously. Even though normally, in order to be able to eat a kosher bird, we have to do shechita. It's the similar type of shechita that we do in an animal. When we kill a bird in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't do shechita, they did malika. The kohen pierced the neck of the bird, and that's how the bird was slaughtered, and if it's a kohen chatas, it could be eaten, chatas haif. So the discussion of our Gemara becomes very clear what the question is going to be. The Gemara's question is, what is the halacha if malika was done on a bird in the Beis HaMikdash, and it turns out to be a treifa? Will the malika accomplish the same that shechita accomplishes? That we just said that shechita accomplishes that it shouldn't at least be Tomei, or Malika not have that ability. And actually, says the Gemara, it's a Machlokes Tanon. And that Machlokes Tanon will shed light on our question that we began the shiur with. Amar B'yemri Toshma, Moloch v'nimtzes treifa. Somebody did a Malika on a bird in the base of Mikdash, and that bird turns out to be a treifa. Remeya Oimer, Remeya says, Einem etam v'beis ablia. That just like had you done shchit on a bird, even if it turns out to be a treif, it's not metama, so will be the halacha by Malika. Rabbi Yehuda Aymer, Rabbi Yehuda says metama basically, it does. And Amar Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rameya, and Rameya says, how do I get to my conclusion? I make the following kalvachoymer. Omanah nevela behemah metama b'maga b'masa. If the nevela of a behemah, and this is where Rav Chaim Brisker explains the Gemara, which has a high level of tumah. What's the proof that it has a high level of tumah? It's matama b'magva mas by carrying or touching. The halacha is shchita mataris tarefasa matumasa. The halacha is if you do shchita on an animal, even if it's found out to be a treifa, it will not be nevela, and it will not be matama like a nevela. Nevelas oif, which is a lower level of tumah. Because as we said a moment ago, it doesn't have the ability to be metamba b'magamasa. Eina din shitei shchitosoi meteres treifosoi metumasa. So we learned the kavachoymer. First we have a kavachoymer from an animal to a bird. That if by an animal, the halacha is that the shchita accomplishes that that animal, even if it's a treifa, should not be metama, so should certainly the shchita of a bird have that ability that if a bird is geshochten and it turns out to be a treifa, it at least will not be matama. So we start with kal v'chomer. And now, the Gemara takes it one step further. Ma'amet sinu, just like we find that the shchita, shemachsharta b'chilosa, the shchita of a regular bird, not in the Beis HaMikdash, is what makes the bird edible, and it's metares terafa mitumasai, and it also has the ability that if it, the bird is treif, it won't be Tomei. So now we have a Ma'amatsinu connecting Shchita to Treifa, the Shchita to Malika, that Malika will have the same rule af Malika Shemakshata Bachila Tata Treifasim Tumasa. So as far as our Sugya is concerned, we have an answer to our question. Because what is Rameya saying? Rameya is saying that we start with a Kal V'chomer, and then we have a Binyan Af, and we see that a kal v'chomer followed by a binyan av is a legitimate way of learning. And as the Mefarshim point out, there is an element of kachim here. Why is there an element of kachim? At least the Gemara learns, because we're talking about Malika. Rav Yossi disagrees. Da'ik nevelas behemah tayra sheshchitas metarasai v'lo Malika. So what does Rav Yossi say? Rav Yossi says, and this is the way the Mefarshim explain the Gemara. Rav Yossi is of the opinion that the shchita of an oif will have the same din as the shchita of a behemah. Malika is altogether different. So in other words, as Rashi points out, there are really three opinions amongst the Tanoim here. Rameh is the opinion, shchita by an animal, shchita by a bird, Malika by a bird, all of them have the ability to prevent that animal or bird from giving off tumah. Rav Yehuda holds, by an animal it does, by a bird it does not. And Rav Yossi differentiates between Shchit and Malika. So what do we see? As far as our sugya is concerned, we got back to Rameya's opinion that a kavachomer followed by binyan av is legitimate. Says the Marvalohi. Hasim tehav hi mishchita tchulun kasyan. Says the Gemara, and this goes back to what we discussed in the previous year a number of times, that when is it considered a subject of chkotshim? That we've been learning kachim have very unique rules, or very specific rules, that not all the derachim, not all the methods that are used throughout shas for a way of learning is acceptable. It's only when it's purely kachim. But here, certainly in the limud the Rameya sets forth, it's not only kachim. We started with shchit of an animal. Shchit of an animal has nothing to do with kachim. We went on to shchit of a bird. Again, nothing to do with kachim. It's only the last part of our trip, of our limud, where kachim came in, malika of a bird. So that's, says the Gemara, not considered a situation of a kachim, a subject of kachim that these questions should come in. Because if it's not a kachim de gishayla, certainly a kavachomer can be followed by binyanav. Continues the Gemara. Another question. Again, following the Gemaras that we've been learning. Why will be the halacha davar lama bebinyanav? We have something that starts with a binyanav, and then it continues mashalama behekesh begzereshava or bekavachayna or bebinyanav. Can a binyanav be followed by a hekesh or by gzereshava or by a kavachaymer or by a binyanav? Gemara wants to know what will be the rule in one of these, in any of these circumstances that have now been identified. Says the Gemara, pshayt miyachada. We can't perhaps answer all of the questions, but one of the situations perhaps can be identified. We know, we've spoken about this halacha, the Torah says, Zois Tayres Ha'ayla, to teach us that even though a carbon may be disqualified, and if it's disqualified, certainly it should not be put on the Mizbeach, there's a halacha of Olu Lo Yardu. Most situations, there are exceptions, which we've discussed and will discuss, but in most situations, if a carbon became disqualified and it was put on the Mizbeach anyway, it should remain there. And this braisa that we're about to learn speaks about that question. When is the halacha olu lo yardu? So the braisa begins. Why is the halacha that if there was dam, that the halacha is that if a carbon is brought today, the zrikas dam has to be done today. And if the day passes without the zrikas dam, the dam becomes lon, and it's not supposed to be put on the Mizbeach. Says the Brice of Neima Omru Lon Bedan Kosher. Why is the halacha that if it was put on the Mizbeach, afterwards it should remain there? Shere Lon Beimurim Kosher. Because the halacha is, Beimurim, if they're lon, again, they should not be put on the Mizbeach, but if they were put on the Mizbeach, they may remain there. What is the case of Lon Beimurim? So certainly, there's no question that if the carbon was brought today, and it's ready tomorrow morning after the Amud HaShachar, it's certainly considered lon on the Emurim. It's way too late to bring the Emurim at that time. But the halacha, as we're going to learn in our Masechta, is that an Emurim may be burnt at night. But there's a machloikus, what does that mean? That Emurim may be burnt at night. One pshat is that even though all our voidas have to be done by day, Haktaras Emurim can be done by night. If so, the definition of lon be'emurin will be that you waited already too late. You waited till the Amud HaShachar to do the Haktaras Emurim, and the Emurim are at that point considered lon. However, there is another opinion. That even though indeed the halach is that Haktaras Emurim is kosher by night, that's only if you began by day. But if you didn't even begin the Haktaras Emurim by day, you can't begin by night. And if night comes before you began any of the Haktaras Emurim, already be considered lon. But again, clearly the halacha is lon be'emrin is kosher. And where do we know, continues the braisa, the lon be'emrin kosher, from where do we know that by emrin that is the din? She'ron lon be'basr kosher. The halacha is that meat, carbon shlamim, that's supposed to be, that's left for the next day, is kosher. Now all of you are obviously thinking the obvious question, how could you bring a raya from shlamim, which are allowed to be left for the next day, to cases where the carbon is not allowed to be left for the next day? Gemara's question. Before we get to further in the Gemara, but what do we have here? What's relevant to our sugya? We have here a situation of a binyan av followed by a binyan av. First, we compared the dam to the emrim, and then we compared the emrim to the basar. So we at least have an answer to the Amrim, the binyanav question, that a binyanav followed by a binyanav is acceptable derech halimud. What happens now, and this is the way that Rishonim explained the Gemara, is since we began discussing this subject about imolu lo yardu, the Gemara continues discussing that issue for a few more lines. Says the Gemara, yaitza, we know that a carbon may not be taken outside the azara. How do we know, says the braisa, that if a carbon was taken outside the Azara, and then it was brought back into the Azara, and then put on the Mizbeach, it may remain there. Since by a Bama, the halacha is, there's no concept of the Azara, so too will be the halacha regarding Yotze. Tamei, how do we know if a carbon became Tamei, and it was put on the Mizbeach, it should remain there? Since we have the concept of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, so at times, a carbon that's tamei, maybe lechatchila put on the mizbeach, so too will be the halacha by tamei. Chutz l'zmanoi, if a carbon was pigel, the kohen had a machshavas chutz l'zmanoi, how do we know if such a carbon was put on the mizbeach, it remains there? This is a halacha we actually learned previously. Hoil maratz l'pigula. And the pshat, the mefarshim explained in this line of Gemara is as follows. And we've spoken about this interesting phenomena regarding pigel. On one hand, as soon as the kohen has a machshavas pigel, the carbon becomes pigel. On the other hand, we've also always learned that it only really becomes pigel if all of the avodas are completed. If the avodas are not completed, as we've always said, let's say after the kohen did shechita, whoever did the shechita, with a machshavas pigel, he then stopped, that carbon isn't truly pigel. It only becomes truly pigel if he finished all of the avodah, shechita, kabbalah, halacha, zrika. So we see that the avodah on pigel is considered an avodah, because if not, it can never become pigel. Therefore, halacha is olal yardu. Chutz l'mekaymai, whereas we've learned earlier, pigel for a chiyuv karis is when the kohen had a mechshavas chutz l'zmanoi. Chutz l'mekaymai is when you had a, it's possible, but there's no chiyuv karis. Hayov hukish chutz l'zmanoi. As we've learned, the Torah connects the halachas by chutz l'mekaymai with the halachas of chutz l'zmanoi. Shekibel psulim. How do we know that if the person who did the avoida was disqualified to do the avoida? That how do we know that if somebody who wasn't supposed to do the avoida did the avoida, and then that carbon, which is therefore obviously disqualified, is put on the mizbeach, the halacha is that it could be remain there? Says the Chazal Avodah Tzibur. Since certain times, even people who are tamei, for example, kohanim or tamei, are allowed to do the avoida, that's why here too. Now ask the Gemara, but let's go back to what the Gemara said before. Two examples the Rishonim give. The first was the example we gave. We wanted to learn the halacha of Lon Be'emrin from the halacha of Shlomim on the next day. Ask the Gemara, how could you compare the two? Lon Be'emrin, there's something wrong done here. Leaving the Karmel Shlomim for the second day, there's nothing wrong. Or the next example that the Gemara gave. The next example the Gemara gave was what somebody took when somebody took the carbon outside of the Azara. From where did the Gemara want to compare it? To the case of a Bama. Again, the same question. A Bama, b'chatchila, you're allowed, there's no din of Azara. Bamas, that times when Bamas were permitted, wherever you wanted, you could erect the Bama. Taking out a carbon from the Azara, when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, or the Mishkan was standing, is Asur. So how could you compare a case where the person didn't do anything wrong, was perfectly permitted, to a case where something is not perfectly committed? Again, V'chidava asked the Madonna V'shloi B'chsher, Madonna V'shbechshera. Tana, therefore answers the Gemara. The reason how we know that all of these cases that we just identified, that even though there's a serious disqualification with the carbon, that loch is in Allah Yardu, is entirely different. Zayis Taras Ila, Zayis Taras Ila, he relies on the Zayis Taras Ila that teaches us that im alu lo yardu. So points out the Shita. Now, we have two consequences of this Gemara. One consequence, obviously, is that we have a pasuk in the Torah teaching us Zayis Taras Ila that im alu lo yardu. Unless there are specific exceptions. But it's really deeper. Now it's no longer a binyanav. We began this piece of Gemara, says the Shita, wanting to know what's going to be the halacha by Binyan Av followed by Binyan Av. And we brought a raya that it's acceptable. But now that the Gemara changed and says it's not a Binyan Av, but it's a drasha from a pasuk, so we no longer have a raya what's going to be halacha by a double Binyan Av, because this isn't the case of Binyan Av, this is the case of a drasha. So with this, we conclude the sugya of the Limudim. And we begin a new sugya. We learned in the Mishnah, Shara Hadam, that the Mishnah said that the Shiari Hadam of the Kabbanis that were brought into the base of Migdash should be poured on the base of the Mizbeach, on the west side. My Tama, Amakra, Yisoid Mizbech Ha'oila, Asher Pesach Ha'oila Moed, Hu the Pagabereshim. So as Rashi explains, what is this Brisa, what is this Pasuk coming to teach us? So Rashi says, that's come to teach us the halacha of the Sor Yom Kippur, that the Shiari Hadam of the Sor Yom Kippur should be poured on the base of the Mizbeach. Because, says Rashi, For the par Yom Kippur, we don't need this pasuk, because we already learned earlier in Amasechta that we learned the halacha of the par Yom Kippur from the par Koy Mashiach. We'll discuss that more in tomorrow's shiur. Ask the Chazon Ish, I don't understand. He says, we know, and we've described this, we'll learn it again later in the Perek, that what was the avoida with the blood of the par Yom Kippur and the Soy Yom Kippur? They had two separate kabbonis, absolutely. But what happened was they started with the par. They took the par into Kodesh Kodashim, the blood. They took the blood of the sor into the Kodesh Kodashim. They took the blood of the par and they sprinkled on the preichus. The blood of the sor they sprinkled on the preichus. But then we learned what happens. They mixed the blood of the par and the blood of the sor. So why does the Gemara ask the Chazon Ish have to teach us that the blood of the sor is poured on the base of the Mizbeach? At that point, it's already mixed together with the blood of the par. And as I said a moment ago, the blood of the par, we know from the par of Kol Mashiach has to be poured on the Mizbeach base. So why do we need to teach us a special pasuk for the Sor Yom Kippur? Chazon Ish's kasha. The Brisk Rav answers the kasha. It's a very nice teretz. It's a simple teretz. He says that what would be the halacha if you had a decent amount of soya blood? And you did the zrikas of the soya blood. You mix together sour blood with power blood, but you still have some independent leftover sour blood. Teaches us this pasuk that leftover sour blood that wasn't all mixed in together with the power blood must be poured on the Mizbeach. It's one way of learning. Another way of learning, again, we'll discuss more in tomorrow's shir, that there are tanoim that hold the shiori hadam and ma'akiv. That if you didn't do the shiori, pouring of the shiori hadam, you have to redo the carbon. The whole carbon. So it teaches us that not only if you miss doing this, the par, that means, let's say, you mix the par and sor together. And you did all, you've completed all the avodas in the base of Mikdash. And now, the leftovers spill out. So we're going to learn in tomorrow's shir, that you have to redo another par in order to have shirayim to be able to pour on the yisoid. So the Gemara here is teaching, the Brisa here is teaching us that according to those opinions, not only do we have to bring a new par in order to be able to accomplish Shvicha Shraim on the Yisoid, but we also have to bring a new Sor in order to be able to accomplish Shvicha Shraim on the Yisoid. Which means, as we'll understand better tomorrow, you bring a new par, you bring a new Sor, and you start with the Avoid on the Mizbeach HaPnimi, where the blood is mixed together, and then that leftover blood will be poured on the Yisoid. There's a very fascinating Tosfos here. Tosfos says that our Gemara has a girsa, that where was the dam poured? The dam was poured on the west side, on the west side of the Mizbeach, and the Gemara says, because of who the Pagav Reisha, that was met first. Says Tosfos, Rashi doesn't have the girsa who the Pagav Reisha. What's pshat? Says Tosfos and the Rishonim who explain Tosfos say as follows. Who the Pagav Reisha speaks to the halacha, well-known halacha, of Emavir Malamitzvus. And therefore, since that's the first place you come to, Eim Avir Malamitzvus, and you shouldn't, and you have to pour it out there. Says Tosfos that the rule of Eim Avir Malamitzvus doesn't apply here. Why? Says Tosfos, when is there a klal of Eim Avir Malamitzvus? When you have two mitzvahs. And the question is, which mitzvah should you do first? So the Eim Avir Malamitzvus, the mitzvah that you have first. But when you only have one mitzvah, in this case, there's no rule of Eim Avir Malamitzvus. Very bechiddush. Not everybody agrees with that chiddush. We'll discuss it in a moment. And others say that what the Gemara here means to say is that it's not just that you have to pour it on the west side because there's a halacha of Eim Avir Malamitzvus. It's more than that. The Torah is specifying that this is the place that dam belongs. What does that mean? So I saw two pshatim, similar pshatim. One pshat is very similar. Very simple. Indeed, when somebody leaves the base of Mikdash, the first side he's going to meet is the west side. And if there's a din of Eim Avir Malamitzvus, you should pour it there. But what happens if somebody forgot to pour it? The guy forgot and he walks further. And now he remembers, I have to pour it out. If the whole reason is because Eim Avir Malamitzvus, so he should pour it where he is now. But if we're saying that the Torah specifically wants us to pour it on the west side, even though there's a rule of Eim Avir Malamitzvus, he's going to have to go back. Tur Evin says it a little more lomdish. Torevit says as follows. We're going to learn later in our parak. The par Yom Kippur blood, any par that's brought inside the base of Mikdash, that blood is poured on the west side. But the blood of Kabbanis that are brought on the Mizbeach Achitzin are poured on the Dharam side. So now we have the following situation. Let's say the blood of another carbon that's supposed to be poured on the south side got mixed up with the, with this blood that's supposed to be poured on the west side. Where do you pour it? Says the Tori Evin that our Gemara is teaching us that since by all the other Kabbanis, the reason you pour it on the south side is only because Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs. But not that the Torah specified specifically a place where it should be poured. Here the Torah, however, specified it should be on the west side. So when you have this dilemma, what to do? Go to the west side. This halacha, when we do or don't apply Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs, has numerous applications in halacha. One application that the Pesukim can discuss about is probably a situation that almost everybody has encountered. We know that when somebody takes off his talis and tefillin, there's a special order how he should put his talis and tefillin back into the bag. He's supposed to put the tefillin, the talis on top of the tefillin. Why is he supposed to put the talis on top of the tefillin? So that tomorrow morning when he puts on his talis and tefillin, he should put on the talis, he's supposed to put on the talis before the tefillin. Actually, for those who wear two pairs of tefillin, you're supposed to put it in a way that you should reach, that the Rashi tefillin should be above and closer to you on the right side than the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, all for the same reason. So now what happens? That, you know, you finished davening today, you're in a rush, and you're busy, or you're preoccupied, and you put your tefillin on top of your talis. And tomorrow morning you open up your talis bag, and your tefillin on top of your talis. What do? You get to your tefillin first. And now we learned Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs. So shouldn't you put on your tefillin first? And as the Pesukim say, certainly if you made a mistake, which also happens, that you made a mistake, you put the shalyad where you put the shalroish, and you put the shalroish where you put the shalyad, there you should put on the shalyad first. Why? Because that's a deraisa. Because the Torah says, v'hoi l'ois al yodecho, l'teitofes b'neinecho, and the Gemara says, kozman shem al yodecho, y'teitofes b'neinecho. You should never have tefillin shalroish without tefillin shalyad. So that's not a shayla. But what about talis and tefillin, where there is no pasuk? But according to Tosfos, it's very geshmak. Because Tosfos taught us a rule that when you have two mitzvahs, then there's a rule of Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs. But since we know the halacha is that you put on the talis before the tefillin, so until you put on the talis, you have no mitzvah of tefillin. So since you have no mitzvah of tefillin, that's why you should put on the talis, even though you have the tefillin more available to you than the talis. Similar point that the Arizal makes, there are many people, especially on the first day of Sukkot, that have a minig that they take the dalaminim, and they make a bracha immediately before they go to shul. Then when they get to shul, they daven and they do the nanuim, but they don't do it but they take the mitzvah of dalaminim first, which is a question. It's tada v'sheina tada, tada kaidim. So shouldn't you daven before you take the dalaminim? The answer, says the Arizal, is your chiyuv to davening is only when you get to shul, because you daven tefillah b'tzibur. Your dalaminim you have at home. You don't need tzibur for dalaminim. So when is there a concept of Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs? That's when you only have both mitzvahs in front of you. Here you only have the mitzvah dalaminim. The mitzvah tefillah hasn't begun yet. Which leads us to another question. There's a famous Magen Avraham, the Paskets. It's really based on a Gemara. That a person, if he has two shuls in his community, should go to the shul that's further. Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan met a woman who was davening in the shul, and he asked her, why did you come to my shul? Aren't the shuls closer to your home? She said, Tzchapsis. There's a concept of Tzchar Alicha. But why, asked the Paiskim, isn't there an issue of Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs? If you're going from your home to your shul, and you pass by another shul, isn't there a rule of Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs? So therefore, if we follow Tosfos' concept, say the Paiskim, that's only a problem if you walk by a shul. But let's say you go on a route from your home to your shul, and it doesn't, not every neighborhood is this doable, but it doesn't require that you walk by another shul. So when is there a concept set Tosfos Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs? When you have two mitzvahs. Here there's no mitzvah because you didn't walk by a shul. Others say that if you specifically get up earlier to get to the shul that's further from your home, that's not Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs, because you got up earlier to go there, not to go to the closest shul. And then I saw another very interesting approach in the Pesukim. They take the following approach. Going to shul is a chelik of davening shul. So it's not like when you're going to shul and you're passing another shul, do you have a problem? Aim avir mala mitzvahs. There's no aim avir mala mitzvahs because walking to the shul is like when you're in shul. Very bechidish. Talking more about this subject, the aim avir mala mitzvahs, the Pais can discuss the following issue. This comes up quite often. The minig in many communities is to do Kiddush Levana Matzoi Shabbos. Why is Kiddush Levana done on Matzoi Shabbos? Because the halacha speaks about a concept of Kishum Avosim. Shabbos, you're wearing the big day Shabbos, so it's appropriate that that's when you should do the mitzvah Kiddush Levana. So what's going to be the halacha? You can already do Kiddush Levana Monday night. And you come out Monday night from shul, a beautiful moon. So why isn't there a problem with Eim Avir Mal Mitzvahs? And wait till Matzoi Shabbos. The answer the Paiskim say is even if there's a concept of Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs, but by waiting to do the mitzvah, you could do the mitzvah better, then we don't say Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs. So since there's a point in doing the Kiddush Levana Matzoi Shabbos, don't wait for Matzoi Shabbos because you'll be able to do a mitzvah more muhuderes. Similar question that the Paiskim discuss on the other way. Let's say this Zman Tefillah is 10 o'clock. And if you got up at 7 o'clock in the morning and you davened, you'd be fine. But you decided to wait till davened till 9 o'clock. And then at 9 o'clock, there was an oinus that prevented you from davening. Are you considered a person that's an oinus? That we know that Allah is if somebody misses a tefillah by oinus, he can make it up by the next tefillah. Well, you're not an oinus. You should have davened at 7 o'clock. You shouldn't have waited till 9. What's the question based on? Is Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs that you should have davened at 7 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock make you that you're not an oinus? Interesting shaila in the Paiskim. There's actually one more interesting famous machloikas. Machloikas Ratfaz in the Chacham Tzvi. There was a person in prison and he was told that they'll give him a furlough one day a year to go daven. So the question was, what should he do? Should he wait to go to shul on Yom Kippur, on Purim, or should he go to shul the next day? Ratzva says he should wait for Yom Kippur, for Purim. The Chacham Tzvi says, Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs. He should go to shul tomorrow morning. So certainly everybody agrees where there's a reason to be concerned that if you wait, you'll lose the opportunity, you should do it the next day. But here we're talking about a case where Yom Kippur is a couple of days away. What about Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs? So according to the Chacham Tzvi, it's Geshmak, because the Chacham Tzvi indeed says that. The Ratvaz is obviously of the opinion that it's not considered two mitzvahs. Every day is its own mitzvah, and when there's every day its own mitzvah, Taisa says there's no Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs, which leads itself to a very common question that many Rabbanim have. The day after Rosh Hashanah is Yom Gedalia. A week later is Yom Kippur. Some people who are weak can't fast 2 days in 1 week. But Yom Gedalia is a Derabbanan. Yom Kippur is a Deraisa. So let's say you have a person who knows that he can't fast 2 days in a week. So what should he do? Should he eat on Yom Gedalia in order that he should be able to fast on Yom Kippur? Or Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs. Now it's Yom Gedalia. On Yom Gedalia we have an obligation to fast. So you should fast. Yom Kippur, you won't be able to fast? So you won't be able to fast. The Torah is not telling you to fast if you can't. Again, the question is, how do you apply Eim Avir Mala Mitzvahs? It's interesting, as we go further into the Gemara, the Torah, as Rashi teaches us, mentions the chiyuv of pouring the shrayim on the yisoid no less than 5 times. But our Gemara, our Braisa now, is going to focus on 3 of those 5 times, with the Torah, besides saying the halacha that it should be poured on the Mizbeach, it says a Mizbach Ha'ayla. And the Gemara's question is, why do we need the Torah to say the words Mizbach Ha'ayla 3 times? It says the Braisa, Tanur Rabbanan, a Yisoid Mizbach Ha'ayla, to teach us that carbon should be poured on the Yisoid Mizbach Ha'ayla, the law Yisoid Mizbach Ha'Pnimi, not on the Mizbach Ha'Pnimi. Furthermore, the next time the Torah uses the word, says the Braisa, of Yisoid Mizbach Ha'ayla, to teach me, a Yisoid Mizbach Ha'ayla, ain't law Yisoid Le'Pnimi, Atzmai. To teach us that only the Mizbach Ha'Oila had a Yisoid, not the Mizbach Ha'Pnimi. The third time, says the Braisa, that the Torah says, a Yisoid Mizbach Ha'Oila, is to teach us, Tein lo Yisoid le Mizbach Sha'Oila. What it comes to teach us that to teach us that all kabbonis that are brought on the Mizbech Ha'Oila, the shrayim of all of those kabbonis should be poured on the Yisoid. Oy Eina, perhaps, says the Gemara, maybe that's not what the Pasuk is teaching us. Rather, says the Gemara, what the Pasuk is teaching us is, Oy Eina, perhaps what the Pasuk is teaching us, Mizbech Shel Oila Yehele Yisoid, that when you do the Zrika on the Mizbeach, you should do the Zrika on top of a place where there is a Yisoid. For as we learned, there is no Yisoid on all of the Dharm side and all on the Mizrach side. And therefore, the southeast corner is a corner over which there is no Yisoid. And the Torah is teaching us that when we do Zrika, we should not do Zrika over a spot where there is no Yisoid. Maybe that's what the Pasuk is teaching us. Again, perhaps what the Pasuk is teaching us is El Mizbech Shel Oila Yehele Yisoid, that when you do Zrik of a carbon on the Mizbech Oila, it should be over a spat with a Yisoid, which would exclude the southeast corner. Am Rabbi Shmuel, says Rabbi Shmuel, we don't need a Pasuk to teach us that. And the Gemara is going to explain these Kavachimers more in tomorrow's shir. Kavachimer. Ma Shraim Sh'ein Mechaprim. If the Shraim that don't affect the Kapara, tune in Yisoid, have to be poured on the Yisoid, as we just discussed a few moments ago, Tchilas Oila, then the original Zrika, Shemechaperis, which is what affects the Kapara, ain't a din, Shetuni Yisoid. So the Halacha, that you should do the Zrika over a spat, that there is a Yisoid, I learned from that Kavachimer. Our Rabbi Kiva, also comes to that conclusion through a Kavachimer, a somewhat different Kavachimer. The Gemara again tomorrow will show us the subtle difference between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Mashraim shem mechaprim vein boin lechapara tunin yisoid. Tchilas oila shem mechaperes ubas lechapara en a tunin yisoid. Certainly that it should be done over a spot with as a yisoid. Concludes the Braisa. So we go back. Im kei matam aloima a yisoid mizbech oila. To teach us ten yisoid mizbech shalayla. Teach us that all kabbanas that are offered on the Mizbech Ha'Oila, on the Mizbech HaChitzin, have the rule of Shvicha Shraim Liyusayim. Although, there is a Machloikas Rishonim, if a Karban Bechor, Meiser, and Pesach require Shvicha Shraim. Because as we've learned previously, all other kabbanas, the way their dam is applied to the Mizbeach, besides the Karban Chatas, is with Zrika. These kabbanas, the Torah says, V'shofach, Shvicha, not Zrika. We've spoken earlier now, the difference between Shvich and Zrika. Shvich is by pouring it directly, by standing near the Mizbeach. Shvich is like throwing it. And some Rishonim say it makes no difference if it's done with Shvich or Zrika. Al Gemara is teaching us that any carbon that's brought in the Mizbeach HaChitzin, the Shiori Hadam, have to be poured on the Yisoid of Mizbeach. Other Rishonim say that no, that this halach is limited to kabbanas that are brought with Zrika, but kabbanas that are brought with Shvicha don't have the din of Shvicha Shraim Liyusayit. We've also mentioned, so I'll mention it quickly again, the machlokes of Rashi and Tosfos, if one has the obligation to leave dam in order to do Shvicha Shraim. Rashi says no. Rashi says if you have dam, do it. Tosfos says that no, you have an obligation to leave over dam. What is the machloikis based on? We've explained that the Chorinim say, because their machloikis is really, what is the Shvicha Shraim considered? If it's considered part of the procedure of the carbon, that's Tosfos' opinion, so therefore you have an obligation to leave over dam, because that's part of the procedure of the carbon. If, on the other hand, the purpose of the Shraim is just a dam avoider, so it means, as Rashi says, if you have that dam, do Shvicha Shraim. If you don't, you don't have to. So now the Gemara goes back to the Braisa. Amar Mar, as the Brisa said, al Yisoid Mizbech Ha'Oila, v'lo Yisoid Mizbech HaPnimi. That the Shvicha Shraim should be done there and not anywhere else. Ask the Gemara, Hamibayle Legufe, don't we need that pasuk to teach us the basic din that the dam or the Parakai Mashiach should be poured a Pesach Olamayit? Answers the Gemara, that we learn from the words, Amishah Pesach Olamayit Nafka. A Yisoid Mizbech Ha'Oila teaches us, it comes to teach us 10 Yisoid L'Mizbech Shel Oila. The Pasuk is teaching us that all Kabbanis that are brought on the Mizbech Ha'Oila requires Shvicha Shrayim. Dik Sakadatach Kediksiv, because if we're going to say that the Pasuk is just coming to teach us the simple halacha, that you should pour the dam of the carbon chatos on the yisoid, hanilam likra, why do we have to say all these psukim shrayim to teach us that they're done, that the shrayim are poured there? Shrayim habra avadluhu. Obviously they should be poured there, because the carbon is brought there, and therefore it should be poured there. So what is the purpose of these extra psukim? To teach us that all kabbonis that are brought to Mizbech HaOilah should be poured on the base. V'chi teima, maybe I need to say that the carbon that's brought chutz la'azara in the Mizbech HaChitzin, not chutz la'azara, in the Mizbech HaChitzin should be poured there, because otherwise if the Pasuk wouldn't have said it, I would think maybe the Apik Meipach and the Gavoy Lebroi, that the kabbonis that are brought on the Mizbech HaChitzin are poured on the Mizbech HaPnimi, and the kabbonis that are brought on the Mizbech HaPnimi are poured on the Mizbech HaChitzin. You can't say that, because we just said there is no Yisoid to the Mizbech HaPnimi. So if there's no Yisoid to the Mizbech HaPnimi, it's obvious that the Pasuk cannot be teaching us that the dam of the kabbonis that are brought in the Mizbech HaChitzin should be poured on the Mizbech HaPnimi, because the Mizbech HaPnimi doesn't have any Yisoid. It must be to teach us that all the other kabbonis that are brought on the Mizbech HaChitzin, where should that dam be poured? It should be poured on the Yisoid, that all kabbonis should be poured on the Mizbech HaChitzin. Actually, Taisus asks an interesting question. Taisus asks, how can we have a Havamina that the dam of a carbon that's brought out in the Mizbech HaChitzin should be poured on the Yisoid of Mizbech HaPnimi, that the Gemara has to tell me it can't be because there's no Yisoid there? We know, we learned earlier in our Masechta, that if you bring a carbon chatos into the Beis HaMikdash, the carbon becomes disqualified. So how can we even have a Havamina that it should be brought in for Shvicha Shrayim? Answer the Mefarshim, that when we, even though the halacha is that if you bring a carbon chatos into the Beis HaMikdash, it gets disqualified, that isn't on the Shrayim. Since, as we're learning, and we'll learn tomorrow, the Shrayim is considered a lower level of Kedusha. So on the Shrayim, there is no halacha that if you bring him into the Beis HaMikdash, it disqualifies the carbon. So therefore, the Gemara does have a right to have a Havamina that you should bring it in. But that says the Gemara, there is no Havamina because there is no Yisoid, and therefore the Pasuk has come to teach us that all kabbonis that are brought in the Mizbech HaChitzin, the Shrayim should be poured on the Yisoid of the Mizbech HaChitzin.